Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges. Advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians. Online at myuff.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida House has okayed a major criminal justice package.
Because once you're a felon in our system, there's no coming back from that.
Lawmakers give a go to prescription medication imports, but will it fly with the feds?
I haven't ever seen us pass any legislation that's going to require additional federal approval before it would even go into effect.
And affordable housing advocates get some, but not all of what they wanted. The state will spend most of that trust fund money on housing, but the bulk is going to hurricane-stricken North Florida. There are just days left in the 2019 lawmaking session, and time is running out to get things done. I'm Lynn Hatter, and you're listening to Capitol Report. The Florida House has passed its comprehensive criminal justice reform package, but Sean Mulcahy reports major differences still exist between the House and Senate versions.
The plan is geared toward easing an already overcrowded prison system and helping inmates transition back into society. It's a major reversal for a body that's previously prided itself on its tough-on-crime approach. Here's Naples Republican Representative Byron Donalds.
Members, when I came into this chamber in 2017, I didn't really anticipate we would even get this far as we are here in the Florida House today, and it is to be commended.
The measure, heralded by a bipartisan coalition of lawmakers, cleared by a vote of 112-1. Pensacola Republican Representative Mike Hill was the lone no vote. He calls the bill soft on crime.
Leniency on crime should not be tagged to inflation, but instead something that is more solid, and that would be morality.
Yet its passage sets up a standoff between the House and Senate. The two bills, both dubbed the Florida First Step Act, remain divided on a number of issues. The House's raises the threshold for felony theft from $300, where it was set over two decades ago, to $1,000. The Senate's caps it at $750. Donalds, for the past 2 years, has pushed for raising the threshold.
The question isn't, is theft wrong? We all know theft is wrong. We all know this. The question is, at what point are you going to be branded a felon for the rest of your life? Because once you're a felon in our system, there's no coming back from that.
Meanwhile, senators want to ease mandatory minimum sentences for low-level drug charges. It would also give judges more discretion when sentencing crimes that carry mandatory minimums. The House bill ends just one mandatory minimum, and it's an odd one: selling improperly labeled horse meat for human consumption. Another sticking point deals with what's called gain time, or time off for good behavior. Current law, called truth in sentencing, requires prisoners to serve at least 85% of their sentence. It's the toughest in the nation. The Senate bill, pushed by Tampa Republican Senator Jeff Brandis, wants to relax that provision, lowering it to just 65% for first-time nonviolent offenders.
I think it's a huge reform, especially allowing for individuals who have committed themselves while they were incarcerated to doing the right thing.
It's not addressed by the House, but state economists estimate it could free 7,600 people in its first year, and more than 9,000 by 2024. And what's more, it could save the state as much as $860 million. Matthew Hasbrock is with the Office of Economic and Demographic Research.
So this one permits up to, again, 20 days per month of incentive gain time. And however, this one, unlike the other one we discussed, is applied retroactively for sentences imposed for offenses committed on or after October 1st, 1995.
The House bill has been sent to the Senate. The Senate's version has been on hold for the past week. After the bill was postponed again Monday, Senate President Bill Galvano signaled talks are still ongoing between the two chambers.
I believe there's still some negotiation going on between the House and Senate. Chair Brandis is working towards a landing on that bill, and so there's probably a chairman decision.
The Senate bill is scheduled to be taken up again Tuesday. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
As lawmakers put the final touches on the state's spending plan, the House and Senate are carving out dollars specifically for affordable housing in panhandle areas hit hardest by Hurricane Michael. Regan McCarthy has more.
Even months after Hurricane Michael ravaged the panhandle, Shaquita Hodges is struggling to find a place to live.
Really, I have nowhere to go. I have 5 kids. I'm pregnant with one. I have 2 friends that reached out to me. That's only thing I can do. I went and got a storage yesterday. So only thing I can do is try to pack all my stuff in storage and try to, I have to split my kids up, and that's awful. Until I can find something else.
Hodges had been living in a rental home in Port St. Joe until she received an eviction notice earlier this month. The storm had damaged the home, allowing rainwater to soak the carpets and mold to grow, leaving one of the rooms unlivable.
Hurricane Michael came through. He did a lot of damage. We was blessed that we didn't have a tree in the house. My son's room, that end of the house, the roof just came on in. I guess over the past time we was here with the water, every time it rained, it came in. Well, it really came in after Hurricane Michael. And we had to remove my son out of the room to his sister's room.
Officials say Hodges is just one example of the larger problem left behind by the hurricane. In the largely low-income and rural communities of North Florida, people are struggling to find housing. Many have called for lawmakers to leave the state's Affordable Housing Trust Fund untouched after years of sweeping the money to prop up other areas of the budget. The government watchdog group Florida Tax Watch released a report this month saying over the past decade, the legislature has taken more than $1 billion from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund to be used for other purposes. Despite the calls, lawmakers are now poised to sweep at least some of the funds, but Senate Appropriations Chair Rob Bradley says the money earmarked for affordable housing is nearly double this year over last year.
We made a big jump compared to where we were last year. We did over $200 million for affordable housing, and I think last year we were just over $100 million.
Bradley says $115 million of that will go expressly to the panhandle.
We have $65 million for the SHIP-like program and $50 million for the SAIL-like program.
SHIP stands for State Housing Initiatives Partnership. It can be used to help low-income to moderate families fix up their homes or even make a down payment on a new home. SAIL is the State Apartment Incentive Loan Program. It offers low-interest loans to developers to build affordable housing units. And affordable housing isn't just a problem for the panhandle. TaxWatch estimates there are only 26 affordable housing units available for every 100 renters who fall within the extremely low income threshold. Lawmakers are allocating about $80 million to address the issue across the state. The final affordable housing numbers fall short of the $338 million Governor Ron DeSantis had put in his budget. It's a proposal the Senate appeared to support. Its budget proposal included no sweeps of the Sadowski Trust Fund. But House Speaker Jose Oliva has said he's not sure subsidizing will address the larger issues behind Florida's housing needs.
If something is growing in size, go to the source and figure out why it's growing. The planning and zoning decisions that are being made do not allow for the private construction of affordable housing. This is a new phenomenon. And the more that we add into it by subsidizing it, the greater that chasm will become.
The House budget proposal initially earmarked just $124 million for affordable housing. I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida legislature has passed a proposal to import prescription drugs from Canada and other countries. Ryan Daly reports the measure will now land on the governor's desk, and from there it will still require federal approval.
Governor Ron DeSantis has long been a proponent of the plan and will almost certainly sign it into law. When he does, it will need a green light from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Two main programs would be created by the bill.
When it came through health policy, we were really only focusing on the Canada program. Now, when we marry up with the House, we have that international program. As you know, the international program needs a little more help from the federal government to initiate such a program.
The two programs would differ in what groups of Floridians they serve. The proposed Canadian importation program would be housed under the State Agency for Healthcare Administration, which oversees Medicaid. It would be intended to serve what some legislators refer to as vulnerable populations. That includes Medicaid patients, inmates in the Department of Corrections, and those getting medications from the Department of Health. Democratic Senator Bobby Powell questions whether those people will ultimately get a raw deal.
This pilot program is indeed a pilot program with specific carve-outs for vulnerable populations. And I think that, Senator Bean, we talked about the opportunities for counterfeiting, and we talked about testing, we talked about a number of things. Well, those things are things that we have to keep in mind.
Powell went on to vote down on the bill, questioning the price of savings when the health risks are unknown.
I, too, would like for drug prices here in the state to be reduced. But at what cost? I think if we risk anyone's life, it's a cost that's too high.
The other program created by the measure would be for use by anyone in the state, and it's not limited to Canadian imports. It creates the International Prescription Drug Importation Program, which would be housed under the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. Vendors in countries under the international program must hold what's called an International Export Pharmacy Permit, created by the bill under DBPR. If a foreign manufacturer holds the permit, they're subject to inspection by the agency. Republican Senator Gail Harrell says she feels the Senate had the bill right in its original form, but still voted up on it.
I think Senator Bean had the perfect bill. The Senate bill was the perfect bill.
It was the provision that gives guidelines for tracking individual prescriptions that inspired Harrell's confidence.
The reason I am going to vote for this today is because of the track and trace elements that are in it. I think we have a responsibility to protect our citizens, our patients here in Florida. And we've done that really carefully with putting into this bill the track and trace elements.
Both of the measure's proposed programs are subject to federal approval. Bean says that green light will function as an extra level of vetting for safety.
What this bill will do is just simply ask permission from the federal government to launch this program. The program's not coming back if it's not safe. Don't tell me it's not going to be safe, because it's not safe, it won't come back.
In closing, before the bill's final vote in his chamber, Bean said the competition introduced by his bill will drive savings at the pharmacy going forward.
We know that if there's a choice out there, taxpayers, they're always going to choose in the best interest of themselves. We know that if there's competition going, we know that providers are going to work to earn the state's business and our constituents' business. They're going to hustle, and we're all winners in that same respect.
Under the bill, DBPR must work with the State Department of Health to create a pilot program for importing the drugs. I'm Ryan Daly.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a video of a South Florida high school student being pepper sprayed and having his head slammed into the ground by a sheriff's deputy has drawn the attention of a prominent Florida civil rights attorney.
Everybody wants to believe the police. You start at a deficit when you go against the police in America at first, especially if you're a black or brown person.
And it's common knowledge that tobacco products are dangerous and cause cancer. Now this year, Florida lawmakers are on the brink of raising the smoking age to 21.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
An effort to raise the smoking age to 21 is moving. Blaise Gainey reports the bill's sponsor hopes his changes are enough to satisfy House lawmakers in order to get a deal done this year.
If it isn't done today, I doubt that it'll be done this year. And so the impetus is to take something less than perfect and try to to continue to work with our colleagues.
That's Longwood Republican Senator David Simmons. He wants to join 12 other states who have already increased the minimum legal sale age for tobacco to 21. Throughout committee hearings, the bill gained a lot of support from health experts, but Rivers Buford of the American Heart Association did have one problem with it.
Unfortunately, the American Heart Association cannot support the bill with the cigar exemption in there, sir. The cigar exemption doesn't make a bit of sense.
Monday, Simmons made an amendment to change his bill.
It increases the age for all tobacco products, including cigars and vaping products and devices and products to 21 years of age.
But opponents say it shouldn't include vaping devices from being sold to people under 21. The argument is that vaping is used as a way to wean people off of cigarettes. But Juul backs the bills. They are one of the largest producers of vapor products. Simmons read their press release describing why.
We are committed to preventing youth access to our products because no young person or non-nicotine user should ever try Juul. Raising the minimum purchase age for all tobacco products has been shown to reduce youth smoking rates. That is why we support efforts by Florida's lawmakers to raise the minimum purchase age for all tobacco products, including vapor products like Juul, to 21.
Juul believes raising the age to 21 will keep it out of the hand of minors by not allowing 18-year-old high school kids to purchase them. The bill was moved to third reading, and Simmons hopes that before the week is out and the session is over, it will ultimately be passed through and sent to the governor. I'm Blaze Ganey.
Over the weekend, Governor Ron DeSantis signed off on 10 new laws. Some will go into effect as early as July. Gabrielle Bolden explains what they are.
The new laws range from an indoor vaping ban to penalties for harming police animals and public record exemptions. Florida voters signed off on Amendment 9 in November. It prohibits vaping or electronic cigarettes in an enclosed workspace. DeSantis has approved an implementing bill for the amendment. American Lung Association's Amy Diaz-Lyon calls it a great opportunity to inform the public.
This, we believe, would provide clear authority for the comprehensive statewide tobacco education and use prevention program to engage in prevention and education around the use of electronic smoking devices.
But Joshua Unger, owner of Von Vape in Sarasota, says vaping helps fight the addiction of tobacco.
I personally have witnessed hundreds of people in hundreds of stores in the state transition from smoking to vaping and then to not vaping. I personally vape zero nicotine. That is an accurate statement. It does exist.
If the law is broken, violators will pay a maximum penalty, not exceeding $25, complete an anti-tobacco program, or finish 50 hours of community service. The new law will be effective July 1st. DeSantis did not have to sign off on another measure of the amendment, which bans offshore oil and gas drilling. Meanwhile, the state is increasing penalties for killing police canines and horses. Violators will receive a second-degree felony instead of a third-degree felony if they were to harm or kill the animals. It earns a maximum of 15 years in prison for those found guilty. Canines United founder Debbie Johnson says the creatures are more than a weapon.
These canines are not tools. They are an extension of their handler. A tool is a taser. These are living, breathing animals with a heartbeat. They have one of the most dangerous jobs in law enforcement and are often the first ones in.
The bill's effective date is set for early October. Other bills approved included aging programs, notifying the Legislative Auditing Committee of financial errors, expanding exemptions to the state's open record laws, and transferring some functions of the Department of Elderly Affairs to the Agency for Healthcare Administration. I'm Gabrielle Bolden.
Divers were busy in April transplanting coral grown in the Tampa Bay area to stressed-out reefs in South Florida and the Keys. WUSF's Steve Newborn reports this unprecedented effort revolves around genetics.
Warming seas, ocean acidification, and diseases like coral bleaching are leaving parts of the world's third-largest reef a ghostly white. Now there's a new threat, stony coral tissue loss disease, or more simply, white plague. The Florida Aquarium may have an answer. In early April, divers transplanted about 3,000 tiny staghorn corals through the reef, where they'll be glued to existing coral beds. But these aren't just any staghorns.
It is the largest outplanting of genetically diverse staghorn coral ever in the history of Florida.
Roger German is CEO of the Florida Aquarium. The aquarium is giving the reef a little genetic diversity. They've scoured reefs throughout the world for a variety of staghorns, trying to find ones that can withstand the onslaught of white plague. The disease was first detected in 2015 off Broward County and has since been found throughout the Keys. It's an infectious bacteria that eats away at the coral.
So if you have the genetics and you diversify that gene pool, what you're hoping for is to create coral that might be more resilient.
First, the little birds and the bees about these marine invertebrates. They only mate once a year, so divers have to figure out what time boy corals release sperm and girls release eggs and scoop them out of the water. Then they're transported to a coral ark in Apollo Beach where they're attached to concrete tiles. There, the toddlers eventually blossom into teens.
So right now what we are doing is we are arcing, in essence, like Noah, you know, trying to arc the coral just to protect it and save it. We are learning how to grow it for the eventual put back in the wild.
I'm up on the rooftop of the Florida Aquarium in the shadow of downtown Tampa's skyscrapers, as far removed as you can imagine from the quiet of a submerged reef. The steady hum of a filter keeps cool water flowing through one of these arcs. Here, a greenhouse basks in the sun, keeping temperatures in the toasty 90s. After all, they're trying to mimic their natural environment. Gabby Valancourt is a senior at the University of Tampa, majoring in marine science. The intern keeps her cool by standing in front of a window air conditioner. She's tending to various forms of coral that are suspended from hangers in the water stream. Tiny frags, or fragments of genetically selected corals, dangle in the artificial current from the white plastic hangers called coral trees.
And so they're hanging down, and this kind of orientation helps them grow 10 times faster in here than in the wild. So they can grow, I believe it's a year in here, and then they can send those pieces back out to be kind of planted in other coral trees in the wild.
So while all of this is still considered experimental, German sees some light at the end of the white plague's tunnel.
I mean, we've really only seen breakthroughs over the last year or two that we are sharing with the world, but that has shown our success. 3 years ago, we did the same thing with the spawn and had, you know, no success at all. So our scientists are working, they're dialing it in, but now we're starting to see that success, which is why we're optimistic about saving this reef.
So for now, this may be the best chance for Florida's reefs to be able to last through the 21st century. I'm Steve Newborn in Tampa.
Finally tonight, recently a video showing an arrest in South Florida went viral. Cell phone video shows 15-year-old DeLuca Roll as he was pepper sprayed by Broward Sheriff's deputies and his head slammed against the pavement in a McDonald's parking lot. Two officers have been suspended from duty with pay. Broward County Sheriff Gregory Tony is under fire for his response to the incident. Now a nationally recognized and Tallahassee-based civil rights attorney has gotten involved. Ben Crump represented the family of Trayvon Martin after he was shot to death in 2012. Crump is now representing Roll. WLRN's Katie Swatulski sat down with Crump to talk about the nuances of Roll's situation and what these types of cases reveal about the criminal justice system.
Why did you want to take this on?
I'm a parent of black children. If you are a parent of children of color, you see a video where this kid was unnecessarily, excessively abused by the police, and you say, if I don't do something, then shame on me. DeLuca is a child. If we don't try to provide a voice for the voiceless, then we should give back our law degrees. For every DeLuca role, we can give you 1,000 minority children who had trumped up charges who spent the night in those detention facilities just because the police or the department conspired to say we're going to teach them a lesson.
You've represented individuals with cases similar to Roll's against law enforcement agencies before. What are the challenges and the nuances that you face?
The first major challenge and hurdle is everybody wants to believe the police. In greater society, now people in our community, we're not so quick to accept what the police narrative is as the gospel. That's the real challenge. You start at a deficit when you go against the police in America at first, especially if you're a black or brown person.
Are there any similarities legally between DeLuca Roll's case and Trayvon Martin's case?
Well, they were both young black teenage boys. That's the first similarity. The distinction, I think, that is huge is the fact that you have cell phone videos so prevalent in society today. When that 911 tape was released and you heard Trayvon screaming, that shocked the conscience of America, and that was big because you have to have something objective. And that's what this video with DeLuca is doing, is shocking the conscience of America. The one thing that I also think is going to be very similar, and I know it's coming, they're going to try to attack DeLuca's character, because they always try to assassinate the character of our children to justify brutalizing them.
What needs to happen so that you no longer have to take up these cases?
There just has to be an overall change in the fundamentals of our legal system, not just the criminal justice system, but our entire legal system. We thought we had already litigated this matter, that black people and brown people were equal in society, that there was no master race, that skin color was the most irrelevant factor to a person's achievement. But now we see from the White House and the rise of all these white supremacy groups that we literally have to define for American culture yet again that we all have value, that we all have worth, and we all are deserving of the full benefit of due process of the law and all our constitutional rights. And it's sad that we are having to relitigate these issues, but things like DeLuca tells us that we cannot take it for granted.
You've been adamant about wanting justice for Luca. What does that justice look like?
The state attorney needs to do his job and press charges. The leadership of Broward Sheriff's Department, if people violate the policies and procedures, which we firmly believe, they should be terminated. For everybody outside of the black community looking at this case, whatever you would demand for your children, we're demanding the same for DeLuca.
That was WLRN's Katie Swatulski speaking with civil rights attorney Ben Crum. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back next week. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education. Online at myuff.org.